Dropping the Gloves. I am your host, John Scott. I appreciate the support. Thank you for joining me here on a lovely, lovely September morning. Fall is in the air. The leaves are starting to turn. My chickens are laying a little less, but that's okay. But the hockey season is around the corner. And that's what we're excited about. Football season is starting tonight or a Wednesday, which is very exciting. And you know, it's just a beautiful time of year. You know, things are changing. But I decided to go on a little trip with my family. I went to visit my parents. And it's funny. I haven't seen their cottage in a long time. Everything was going swell. I was, you know, catching up with them. Life was good. We went on the boat. And it's funny how things can turn. When things are going so great, you're having a good time. And then all of a sudden, boom, at the drop of a hat, it goes south. It catches you off guard. So we were on our boat. My dad is, you know, blessed enough to have two boats. He's got a nice pontoon and he's got a little speed boat. Bow rider seats about 7 or 8, and then the pontoon seats about 10 to 12. So they're two decent sized boats, and we tied them together. Small little lake, Cuba Lake in western New York. But then there was a wakeboarding boat going around. I'm sure all of you know those, so massive wakes. And so we're tied up side by side. I'm in the water swimming. The wake comes, and I can see the boats going, boom, crashing together. My dad can't stand that. He doesn't want his boats to touch. They're his pride and joy. He takes very good care of everything he owns. So he's, you know, a little bit older, long in the tooth. You think he's like 67. His birthday is actually in a couple days. He's turning 68, if I remember correctly. But he jumps up and he tries to keep the boats from hitting each other. And we got buoys, we got bumpers, we got the actual tube in between these two boats. But these waves are so massive from these wakeboarding boats. I think it was a Mastercraft that went by or something similar. And they just like throwing these massive waves for these wakeboarders, which in my opinion, wakeboarding doesn't look fun at all. You just kind of sit behind the boat and do nothing. Just ride the wave. I guess that's fun for some people. Anyways, he's holding these boats apart, but then as waves do, they come together and then they go apart. As the boat kind of separates from the other boats, he can't grab on to the speedboat anymore, and he's in the pontoon boat, and so his hand slips off, and he does a 180 and falls right into the water. And the boats come back together, and I'm in the water at the back on the ladder, kind of just riding it out, and I panic right away. So I jump into the speedboat, lunge across three kids, and try to figure out where he is. And he's underwater. And my thought process is he's going to come up and get his head smashed between these boats and die. And then we're going to witness a death, my kids and I and my mom. My mom's freaking out. She's screaming at me to get into action. And everybody else is just kind of panicking. And so I don't know what to do. I get up and I instinctively just hold the boats apart as best as I can so they don't smash his head when he comes up. But thankfully, you know, he comes up, he dove under, and it's funny how it works. He was not wearing a life jacket, which in a roundabout way saved him, because if he would have fell in and been held up by the life jacket, he could have been smushed between the boats. But he was able to dive under, and he had the wherewithal, he said after the fact, to kind of swim away from the boats. He cut himself on the motor and the prop pretty good. He hit the cleat of the speedboat going down. That grabbed him pretty good. And he was beaten up. And that kind of put a souring effect on the rest of the trip. He kind of, you know, when you're that old, I don't know how it is, but I can imagine life and death. And death is, you know, knocking on your door if you have a situation like that. It's pretty, you know, tragic and kind of makes you take stock of everything. So he was pretty quiet the rest of the day and the following morning when we left. But, you know, it just takes a moment. Just for things to go really, really good to really, really bad. And like I do always, I'm always thinking about the show. I love doing the show. It's my whole life. And I just thought, you know, it would be nice to get a catch up on the Toronto Maple Leafs, because we haven't talked about them in a while. And for things to go to good to bad, the Toronto Maple Leafs know more than anybody how quickly that happens. 1 minute, you're on the cusp of a dynasty. You have this great young core. The best core arguably ever assembled. You have Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and Willie Nylander and Johnny Tavares and just a group of good young defensemen. You have the world by the coattails. but then you continue to flounder. You get a little better, you get some veterans to come in, and then it's always the next year. It's always the next year. And then all of a sudden last year, the floor is just swept out from underneath you. Mitch Marner says, nah, I don't want to be here anymore. This isn't working for me. He leaves, goes to the Vegas Golden Knights, goes to the Stanley Cup Finals, almost wins for Pete's sake. A couple games away from getting a ring, and he would have won the Conn Smythe. And then what do the Toronto Maple Leafs do during that season? They have their worst season since 2015 and 16 when they came 30th in the NHL. Dead last. They went from finishing top 10 in the NHL since 2017 and 18 to finishing 28th last year. It was a complete just falling apart of a once storied. And storied is a strong word for this team. But for a franchise that went into every season, and I think we can all agree, with Stanley Cup aspirations. This was the team that spent to the cap. This is the team that did everything at the deadline. For as much criticism as Kyle Dubas took, he did whatever he could to make this team a Stanley Cup contender. Each and every offseason, each and every trade deadline. They would trade their first-round picks. They would trade their young prospects. They wouldn't sit on their hands idly by. They would go out and get toughness if they needed toughness. A veteran defenseman will go and get veteran defenseman. Scoring, will try to get scoring to supplement these high-end guys. Nothing has worked. Nothing at all. And I think it came to a head last season when they finally lost Mitch Marner, where everyone just said, I don't know if this team is ever going to take that next step. Auston Matthews has been injured the last couple of years. Last year, struggled through injuries, but still when he's on the ice, he produces. But they finished 28th. 15th in the Eastern Conference, 8th in the Atlantic, did not make the playoffs. Time for, looking yourself in the mirror. What do? They fired their head coach, Craig Berube, gone. They fired their GM, their second GM in the last 3 years, Brad Tree Living, gone. They hired John Shaika from nowhere. He was the Arizona Coyotes GM for a few years, and he just disappeared. They hire him. They get Jim Hiller, ex-coach of the LA Kings, to come in, try to right the ship. Jim Hiller, known for his discipline, known for his defensive prowess. Last year, the Toronto Maple Leafs, their goals against average was -46. Their goal differential, I should say. Terrible. The worst in the league. Not by far, but actually the Blackhawks were a little bit worse and the Vancouver Canucks were a little bit worse, but bottom three. Terrible. Terrible company to be with. If you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, that should be vying for a Stanley Cup year after year. And you're in the same breath as the Vancouver Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks, two obviously rebuilding teams. So where do they go? They hire these two guys. Then what happens in the offseason? It's a complete overhaul. Complete overhaul. Gone. Joseph Woll out the door. Matias Maccelli gone. Nick Robertson. Cale Yarncroc. The D-man. Brandon Carlo. Simone Benoit. Gone, gone, gone. That's a big turnover. 7 players from your roster gone. In. Sergei Bobrovsky, Darren Radish, Emil Andre. The bottom six got a complete retool. Jack Roslovic, Colton Sissons, Nick Paul, Brandon Duhamey, Teddy Bluger, Zach McEwen, friend of the show. They're all in. They're trying to compete with arguably the best division in hockey. The Atlantic Division has been historically strong. But it seems in the last 5 years, or even 3 years, the kind of would-be teams are starting to get their footing. The perennial contenders are reloading. And then the teams that are strong are continuing to be strong. The Buffalo Sabres came out of nowhere last year to win the Atlantic. The Tampa Bay Lightning, regrouping from all the injuries, managed to stay competitive. Montreal Canadiens, all of their prospects coming of age, finally having that breakout season where we all wanted them to see. We all wanted them to do. They finally developed last year into a real contender. Boston Bruins bouncing back from their down year. Ottawa Senators, not really coming out of nowhere, but maintaining that competitive trajectory that we want them to do. And then, of course, the Red Wings stunk. The Panthers had insane amounts of injuries. I think they had around 600 injury games missed because of all the guys that they lost, and it was their higher-end guys. It was Matthew Tkachuk. It was Barkov. It was Marchand. It was Reinhardt. It was the top guys who missed time last year. And then to round out the Atlantic was the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they didn't really have a good excuse last year. Yes, Mitch Marner was gone, but they brought in Nicholas Waugh. They still had a very competitive team. Yeah, Auston Matthews missed some time, but not that much time. He played 60 games. They just stunk. There's no other way to put it. Their defense was terrible. Their offense was atrocious. Their goaltending was awful. They wanted to make me vomit. Stolarz missed some time with injuries. When he was in the net, he wasn't good. His save percentage was hovering around 870. It's not good enough, especially for a team that gives up the amount of chances that they give up. You need a goaltender to steal some games and to make some saves. And he wasn't making the saves that he should have made. So John Chyka comes in. Very controversial hire. He comes in and he just starts making moves. And you got to applaud him for that. You know, it takes a lot of, you know, I should say balls, but it is. It takes a lot of guts to come in your first season in the most difficult position for a GM in the NHL as a Toronto Maple Leafs GM. You're coming into a team that has some bad contracts, some ill will with the fan base, and some players, maybe not so quietly, are having questions if they even want to play there. Willie Nylander has never been one to say he's not having a good time. Auston Matthews has not been committed to this team. He has one foot out the door, seems like always. And then there's always been trade rumors swirling around Morgan Rielly, the anchor of that decor. So he has to come into this situation and try to calm the waters. And then what do? Do you just continue to sell? Do you try to cobble together a competitive team? Because down the road in 2 years, Auston Matthews will be an unrestricted free agent. And much like it is in Edmonton, where Connor McDavid pretty much said, you guys have 2 years to figure this out, to get me a Stanley Cup. And Toronto Maple Leafs have 2 years to try to make the playoffs for Auston Matthews, to try to convince this guy to stay in Toronto. And so John Chyka looks at everything going on around him in the situation. He goes, we have to address some offseason issues. And the biggest one last year was the back end and goaltending. This team can score. I think that's been well documented. When they want to score, they can score. But the back end has been a constant issue. It's been a glaring weakness. And the goaltending has been hit or miss. There's been times when the goaltending has been outright fantastic, and there's been times when the goaltending has been dog garbage. So he tries to address both of those. What do? You go out and you get the most playoff season goaltender that there is, Sergei Bobrovsky. The Florida Panthers decided to part ways with this guy. They couldn't come to a deal, obviously. So he becomes an unrestricted free agent. And what do? If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, your goaltenders have floundered in the playoffs. Stolarz last year was bad. Wall was bad. What do? You go out and you get a very decorated goaltender. He's won Vezinas. He's won Stanley Cup champions, but he's 37 years old. He's coming off a season in which he had an 893 save percentage. Sorry, an 876 save percentage in 52 appearances. They obviously didn't make the Stanley Cup playoffs, so he couldn't maybe ramp it up for the playoffs where he's been known to do. But you're giving him a 3-year, $7 million deal where he's coming off the worst year statistically in his career. That's a major leap in my eyes. But you have to do it because you have to give this team something to rally around. And when you bring in a guy of his ilk, a guy with that track record, that obviously sends a message to this team saying, hey, we ain't done here. We're going for this. Our goaltending is an issue. Here you go. This guy is dominant in the playoffs. We saw what he's done the last 2 out of 3 years. The guy is an absolute unit when the game needs to be won. He will win you the game if you get to a game 7. He will win you a game when you're down a game and it's game 6 and you have to get to a game 7. That's where this guy thrives. He is that type of goaltender. Okay, check. Goaltending done. What else do we need? Well, our defense sucks. And I think everybody across the league will agree to that. We're not good. Simone Benoit, terrible. Brandon Carlo, atrocious. We need some help on the back end. Who do we get? Well, how about a Norris Trophy candidate, Darren Radish? Came out of nowhere last year. He was a steady defenseman for a long time in the NHL, but given the opportunity last year in Tampa Bay, he thrived. 70 points in 73 games, 22 goals, 48 assists, 10 power play goals. The guy's got an absolute cannon from the point. And he's going to be a UFA. But you want to sign him for a max term. So they do a sign and trade with Tampa Bay. They get him for 8 years. They lock him up long term, $8.5 million. That's a big deal. That's a big time ticket for a big time player. Now, the issue there is, yeah, he was a Norris Trophy candidate. Yeah, he put up 70 points in 73 games. But if you look at the previous two seasons, it's 37 points in 73 games, and it's 33 points in 82 games. 6 goals both seasons. Now, who is the real player? Is it the player who, when given the opportunity, rose to the occasion and was able to get a point per game? Or was that just an outlier and he got lucky and he was able to kind of feed off of a Kucherov-driven power play? He was able to get a ton of minutes whenever he wanted to. He was getting almost 4 minutes per game on the power play. That's a lot. Will he be able to get those same opportunities in Toronto? Probably. But which player are the Leafs going to get? Are you going to get the guy who puts up 35 points and gets you maybe 10 goals and puts in maybe 5 or 6 power play goals? Or will you get the guy who's a Norris Trophy candidate and who just anchored your decor, plays 25 minutes? Because it's a big deal. If you get the former, the 35, 40-point guy who puts up 6 to 10 goals, this deal doesn't look so good. But if he continues to play like he did last year, holy cow, this is the best deal in hockey. You're getting a point-per-game defenseman at $8.5 million. That's an absolute steal. That's an absolute deal John Shaika just pulled from everybody. But we'll see. I played with Darren Radish last year in a charity game. It was the hockey night in Brampton. There were some big names there. There was Tanev. There was Radish. There was Matthews. I can say the guy's an absolute just monster. He's a big, big physical person. He's 6'1", 6'2", probably 210 pounds. So he's not going to get hurt. But he didn't move too well. He's not one of those fleet-footed defensemen. But he's got a cannon for a shot. He knows where to go. He's good positionally. So he won't be a liability on the back end. But I don't know. He's 30 years old. And giving a guy an 8-year contract when he's 30 years old, and he's not one of these little water bugs who can fly around the ice, it makes me nervous. Or is he a Brent Burns who just ages like red wine? He doesn't really slow down at all. He just kind of transitions his game. And he's still a very effective defenseman. I don't know. But they signed Darren Radish. And they go out and make a trade and get Emil Andre from Philadelphia. I don't know how much that will impact the team. He's a solid defenseman. He hasn't really done much in Philadelphia. He's played in the AHL every single season. He's been a pro. So he's been up and down. Even last year, he played 61 games in Philadelphia. He played some games for the Philadelphia Phantoms to start the season. So he has never made the team out of camp. But he had a good, strong finish to the season, played some games in the playoffs for them. He'll be a good third pairing for the Leafs, but I don't think he's going to make a huge difference on this team. I guess it's an upgrade over Simone Benoit, who was, man, that guy sucked, right? Like, he just was so bad. And he'll play with OBL on the third pairing, but it's an upgrade. And then the biggest change on this team, other than the goaltending and the back end, which is a big change, is they have 6 new guys for their final 6 players. Well, depending on how they roll out their lineup. But they have a ton of new blood on the back end, and they're bringing in some sandpaper. They have some Stanley Cup pedigree. They have some good faceoff players, as Colton Sissons, arguably the best second-line center in hockey. If you ask Nate Anderson, the National Predators beat writer, he was on our show comically 2 or 3 years ago, and he said Colton Sissons is going to have a breakout year. He's going to be playing with Stamkos. He's going to put up 40, 60 points, no problem. And he just like kind of took a dump on the ice. But here he is on the fourth line with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's making a boatload of money. I was shocked when I saw Cap or Puckpedia. He's making $4.25 million. Colton Sissons, this 32-year-old guy coming out of the Vegas Golden Knights, where he put up an insane 11 points in 66 games. So I guess you're paying for his penalty kill. You're paying for his faceoff prowess. I don't know. But he had a good run with the Vegas Golden Knights last year down the stretch, did well in the playoffs, got him a pretty hefty payday, 2 years, $4.25 million at his 32-age season. So that's a big get for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They get Jack Roslovic, who right now is slotted to play in the first line. Maybe he can, you know, be that winger for Austin Matthews and Matthew Nyes, kind of round out that trio. I don't know if he has that in his bag. They did it in Edmonton. He had a decent season last year, 36 points in 69 games. But he hasn't been that first-line guy. And he's had tons of chances to do it. They tried it in Columbus. They tried it with the Rangers. They tried it with the Hurricanes. They tried it with the Oilers. And he hasn't really stuck. If he would have stuck and he would have played well, he would have re-signed with any of those teams. So he's been bouncing around the league with these GMs thinking, hey, if I slot him here with Connor McDavid, he's going to play well. If I slot him with Sebastian Aho, he's going to play well. He's going to stick. Oh, well, what do we put up with Mika Zibanejad? He's going to stick. He's been playing with the best players on the planet, and he hasn't stuck. So we'll see him on the first line with the Toronto Maple Leafs with Knies and Matthews, and he'll eventually work his way down to third line where I think he thrives, and that's where he excels. But he'll get a shot in the first line. But the big deal here is, yes, you got the depth in hockey on the third and fourth line. Yes, you got Bobrovsky. Yes, you got Darren Radish. It was the first overall pick. And that was the shining light that came out of their just train wreck of a season last year. They got the number one overall pick, and you get this quote-unquote generational talent. You get this guy to come in and just instantly just give this team a boost. It's the Connor Bedard effect. It's the Macklin Celebrini effects. It's the Schaefer with the Islanders effect. He comes in and he brings that energy. And he's going to come into this locker room where everybody's miserable. You know, last season was a kick to the gonads. You almost come last in the season. You just had a terrible year. Mitchie Marner, you had to sit there and watch him in playoffs just thrive, scoring goals, you know, winning the Western Conference. That's tough. So the beautiful thing about this is they just get a redo. You come into the season, you have a stud goaltender, hopefully. You have a Norris Trophy defenseman. And you have the best player coming in Gavin McKenna, that the Leafs have seen in a long time since Austin Matthews. Like, the excitement is Toronto should be there. But are we getting a little bit ahead of ourselves? I think we are. You know, they were rated as the second best offseason by Hockey News. So the sky's the limit for this team. They're already planning the parade. Well, let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. Yes, they had to make some moves. Last year, missed the playoffs, watched Marner. It was a tough year, injuries. Everybody failed. Everybody played under their expected metric. But they had to do better. They had to do something, I should say. And Shaika came in and he shook the hornet's nest a little bit. He kind of put everybody on notice. Matt Sundin was hired. It was a big offseason. You know, Berube was gone. They got the new coach. And they just a whole new team is there. 10 new players entering this roster. But when you look at this roster from top to bottom, it doesn't strike me as a very intimidating roster. You know, the high-end talent's there. It's always going to be there. It always has been there. Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, Knies, and you add McKenna into that group. But is McKenna going to have the same impact as, you know, Schaefer had, or, you know, Macklin Celebrini had, or Connor Bedard had? Maybe. We'll see. But time will tell. But their issue has never been high-end talent. And the secondary talent that they got, you know, the Blugers, the Duhamey, the Sissons, the Nick Paul, they didn't get deals on these guys. And they're not exactly spring chickens. You know, Paul is 31. Duhamey is going to be 30. Bluger's 32. Roslovic's 29. Sissons is 32. This was an already older team. And everybody that they signed was older. So the only youthful player on this roster right now is Gavin McKenna and Easton Cowan. Those are the only two guys 30 years old or younger, which is insane. And I guess Matthew Knies is 23. But the majority of this roster is 30 years older or older. Like, those three guys are the only guys 30 years or younger. So does that sound like a championship title team? Or does this sound like a team that it was kind of thrown together at the last minute and you couldn't find any young talent? You couldn't find any players that you wanted to get. So you just went out and you got guys whose names were good 5, 6, 7 years ago. They may have lost a step, but they still have that, you know, that cachet, like a Nick Paul. Very effective forward, don't get me wrong, but his best hockey is behind him. Colton Sissons, same thing. Brandon Duhaime, same thing. Teddy Bluger, same thing. The primes of these guys' careers are gone, but you still have to pay them. So when you look at the dollar amount you sign these guys for, like a Nick Paul making 3.15, that's all right. Duhaime, 2.6, I don't know if that's a good deal. Teddy Bluger, 2.5. These guys are going to be fourth-line guys, and they might get you 10 points. They might do some decent work on the penalty kill, but you're spending, and maybe that's the sign of the times. But based on the lineup they rolled out last year versus the lineup they rolled out this year, I don't see a vast amount of improvement. Darren Radish, is he striking fear in the opposition? Their top six D-men, like, they're okay. They're not great. McCabe, Radish, Riley, Tanev, OEL, and Andre. In my opinion, that stinks. And when you contrast them to the other teams in the Atlantic Division, because that's what we have to do here, right? Florida Panthers, down year. What do? Well, we go out and we get Brady Tkachuk. Olympic gold medalist, proven star in this league. Like him or lump him. The guy's a star in this league. They go out and get him from Ottawa. They revamp their goaltending. Get in Jacob Markstrom and Akira Schmid. Markstrom's a good goaltender. Cheaper and younger than Bobrovsky. Go out and get some beef on the back end with Radko Gudas. Get some secondary scoring in the bottom six forwards with Lars Eller and Garnet Hathaway. And then you're revamped. And then everybody's healthy. Yeah, you lose Bobrovsky. You lose A.J. Greer and a couple other tertiary pieces. But you didn't lose all that much, considering Bobrovsky was garbage last year. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, you lose your biggest piece, Darren Radish, to the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do? Oh, you go out and you sign John Carlson, who had a fantastic year with the Anaheim Ducks last year. Get him for a two-year deal. I think he's an upgrade over Darren Radish. You bring in some tertiary, secondary guys, Jeffrey Vial. I love him. You get Makiev. You get a backup goaltender in Hildeby. So you do some good work. The Buffalo Sabres, they downgraded. They had to trade a ton of players. Bowen Byram gone. Alex Tuck gone. Devin Levi gone. They had to re-sign a lot of their core. Zach Benson re-signed. Peyton Krebs re-signed. Beck Malenstein re-signs. All of these guys took up valuable cap space. So I think they won't be as good this year. Montreal Canadiens, they re-signed all of their core to great contracts. Ivan Dedmonov re-backed. Jakub Dobish re-signed. Kirby Dach re-signed. They got a couple minor pieces, but they're going forward with the group that they rode with last year. They have a little more experience. They'll be better this year. The Boston Bruins, they add J.J. Paterka, a huge thing. They re-signed Fraser Minton, who would look pretty good in the Toronto Maple Leafs uniform this year. And then we can't leave out the Detroit Red Wings. They're going all in. They signed Daniil Tarasov and Keegan Kolesar. And, of course, to round out their top six, they got Victor Arvidsson. What a joke that franchise is. But if the Toronto Maple Leafs, back to them, you're trying to compete in this Atlantic division. And every other team in the division is adding players or re-signing their core. You lost big pieces. And the pieces you added are ho-hum. They're good. But I don't think they're good enough. And this is a big season for you. This is a massive season. Your first-round picks this year and next year are gone. You traded them away. You traded your first-round pick for this coming season in the Carlo trade. You traded your first-round pick in 2028 in the Scott Laughton trade. And things are going to get real funny if you stink again this year and the Boston Bruins end up with a lottery pick on the Brandon Carlo trade. And the way things are going, they're trending in that direction. And then the following year, you're going to lose that one as well. Yeah, you have a first-round pick next year from the Nicholas Waugh trade, but it's going to be a Colorado Avalanche first-round pick, which is going to mean 20-plus. That's going to be a bad first-round pick. So this season, for as much as you did, for as hard as you worked to revamp this roster and to sign players and create a new culture and to get some sandpaper and to get a goaltender and to get a defenseman and to really put your stamp on this team, things are going to go sideways real, real fast. Because when I look at this roster, it ain't good. You're still $2.75 million over the cap. Yeah, I know Domi will hit LTIR and that'll figure that self out. But that means you're left with no room to work with if things don't go well. All of these caps and the guys you brought in, you're handing out no move clauses like it's going out of style. In what world does a Brandon Duhamie get a full no trade clause for 3 years? And Nick Paul gets a modified no trade clause, 16 teams. And Dakota's got one, and Domi's got one, and Colton Sissons has one, and Darren Radish has one. Everybody has an effing no movement clause on this team. The only guys who don't are Matthew Nyes and Jack Roslovic and Bluger and Lorenz. But it's crazy that you continue to give out these things. And what's even more asinine and crazy and just dumb is I keep hearing Matthew Nyes trade rumors just floating around the NHL. This guy is a stud, and he signed on a good contract until 2031 at $7.75 million. If you even entertain trading this guy, who will be a point-per-game player this coming season, who is an absolute moose and does everything right on the ice, you need to get your head checked. It's not very often you get a 6'3", 235-pound forward who has that shot and has that speed and has that dog in him, and you're going to trade him away? Just because he's the only guy who didn't sign with a no-trade clause? You're crazy, man. So for all the good work that happened this offseason, for all the moves and for the, you know, the ping pong balls to go your way, this team is still at the crossroads. And if things go that the way they did last year, I fully, fully see this team being a lottery pick this year. And if it's not, they would be lucky to be that bad, because then they could trade everybody at the deadline. Where I see this team ending up is being a bubble team, missing out on the playoffs, and not even getting a draft pick because Boston owns it. But then just running it back the year after because they have all these no-trade clauses. They have all these guys under okay contracts, but none of them are an outstanding deal. And then they're just going to wash, rinse, and repeat. And then in 2 years, mark my word, Auston Matthews will be in the same situation as Mitch Marner. He's got a full no-movement clause. Toronto's going to want to trade him, and that'll be the big issue. In 27-28, can you trade Auston Matthews? Because this team will stink this year. Mark my word. For everybody out there saying, oh, they had a great offseason, they're going to bounce back. They got Bobrovsky, they got Radish, they're going to have a great power play. They're going to be motivated. They're going to want to stick it up Marner's behind. This is going to be a great season. They're going to have some depth. They're going to have some grit. They're going to have roster, you know, turnover. They're going to have some competition for some spots, which we haven't had in year past. It's not going to be enough, you guys. This team still stinks. This team still has a lot of just bad contracts, in my opinion. And when the Atlantic Division is loaded as it is, the margin for error is very, very slim. Do I think Bobrovsky will have a bounce back year? No, I don't. This was a guy who had a decent, you know, save percentage with the Florida Panthers over the last 3-4 years, hovered around the 900 mark. That was a hell of a good Florida Panthers team. And he was at 906, 901, 915, 913, 906, 900. That's a very good Florida Panthers team. That was a very good defensive structured team with all-star caliber defensemen playing in front of him. And now he's going to a Toronto Maple Leafs team that has no structure. It's a fire sale in the D zone every time they play. It's just a grade A chance factory. And you think, coming off of a 3.07 goals against average, 0.877 save percentage, that he's going to all of a sudden bounce back when he's 38 years old? You're nuts. He's going to hate playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Oh, but their coach is going to save him. He's going to lock him in. He's going to be a more disciplined coach. He's going to get him to play defense. They've tried that, you guys. What do you think Craig Berube was? That's what his calling card was coming to this team. Boom, discipline. We're going to get him to play. I'm going to get Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares and everybody. I'm going to put him on the straight and narrow, or else I'm going to cut their ice time. That didn't happen. Maybe for a blip on the radar. Then they reverted back to the team that we always know they were. And that's the team they are today. They are a run-and-gun team. They don't want structure. They don't want accountability. They just want to go up and down the ice and have fun. They don't want to get hit. They don't want to fight. They don't want to block shots. They want to have a good loosey-goosey type game. They can't do that. Bobrovsky is going to have worse stats next year than he did this year. He will hate playing for this team. There's going to be issues in the locker room. These guys, they're going to implode. Because you have all these veterans coming in who maybe will try to change the culture. Maybe they'll try to spur a revolution. But at the end of the day, this team is steered by Matthews and Nylander. These two guys run this team. And these are the two guys who, and it, you know, maybe it's the sign of the kids, the millennials or whatever, Gen Zers, Gen Xers, whoever the hell they are. They show up when they want to show up. They, you know, give these interviews like they don't care. They don't show a heartbeat on the ice very often. And they're going to try to change them, but you can't change them. And at the end of the day, they can sign as many players as they want to sign. They had Patty Marleau. They had Mark Giordano. They had Joe Thornton. They had the who's who of just veteran leadership. Guys that you would want to run through a wall for, that I've played with, that are just upstanding human beings. Could they get through these kids? Not a chance. They are not changing. And it's laughable to think that you can just add some bottom six forwards and all of a sudden this team is going to turn the corner and just be like, woo, here we go. Stanley Cup or bust. This team will be lucky to make the playoffs. This team will be lucky to win a game in the playoffs. In my opinion, they blew it. They should have tried to trade everybody. but they're trying to cobble together a team to try to maybe re-sign Austin Matthews. It's a huge mistake. I've said it before and I'll say it again. You're not going to win with this guy. And adding an aged goaltender, adding a defenseman who had a hell of a season, but will more than likely revert back to his decent defenseman self, and a bunch of forwards who have seen their better days behind them, doesn't mean you had the second best offseason. The high of this offseason was getting Gavin McKinnon, and that was nothing you did to control that. That was the luck of the draw. So good for you. You got Gavin McKinnon, but everything else was just, it's just distractions. This team still sucks. This team will continue to suck until you get rid of Matthews, you get rid of Nylander, and you change the culture. But if those two guys are there, it's never going to change. So with that being said, cheers, everybody. I appreciate the support. We're going to have a hell of an interview coming up. We got Jay Miller, one of the toughest players of all time, coming up. I'm going to do an Edmonton Oilers deep dive, get maybe a Connor Murphy on, just see what the hell happened last year in the playoffs and get his take on this season. But lots of exciting stuff coming up. Camps around the corner. I appreciate the support. And yeah, cheers, everybody. Have a good one.